Hey, y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. Ever order furniture online and wonder, what if? Like, what if it doesn't fit?
Little to the left. No, wait!
Yep, should have gone with Wayfair. Or what if it doesn't hold up?
That sofa was 4 days old.
Should have ordered from Wayfair. Or what if it's that material that makes that noise?
It was a sofa, I swear.
With Wayfair, there's no what if. Just style you love, quality you can trust, and furniture that actually fits your life. Visit Wayfair.com or download the Wayfair app.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What is Toyota affordability? It all starts with buying smart. And your Toyota dealer has great deals available to qualified customers on reliable cars and SUVs, including the redesigned RAV4, spacious Grand Highlander, sporty Camrys, and Corollas. It means driving for less with efficient hybrid and plug-in hybrid options available throughout the lineup, extending your overall driving range and delivering great MPGs, saving you money at the pump. And it means trading for more. Toyota is known for building long-lasting vehicles. And as the best resale value brand, according to Kelley Blue Book, your Toyota can be worth thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicle's projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit KellyBlueBooksKBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, Chicago. We are broadcasting through the Hyundai Score Studios, and welcome to another edition of Inside the Clubhouse. I am David Haw with Bruce Levine, and welcome to our last weekend of baseball for a very long time. And while it's been a very busy week in Chicago with the Blackhawks scandal, Bears angst, we are still talking Cubs and White Sox as we do 52 weeks a year right here on the Score, 9 to 11. Bruce, there's a lot going on to keep our interest and pique our curiosity. White Sox and Cubs both making some news. Been a quiet week, but an eventful one. The World Series is now entering game four after a 2-0 victory by the Braves over the Astros last night. We'll get into that. We'll get into all of it. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, David. Yeah, I'm excited about the off season here on Inside the Clubhouse. So our number for your knowledge and for your use is 312-644-6767. Call David and myself, and we'll talk to you Cubs, Sox, everything baseball. But what I'm excited about is the off season and when the off season free agent and trade market might begin. Will there be stealth teams like the Cubs and White Sox, David, who jump out into the free agent and trade market quickly before we know what the collective bargaining agreement deal is going to be? December 1st is when that's up. And after that, all bets are off as to what the new rules will be in 2022. So from that perspective, will teams jump out quickly? November 8th. Begins the GM meetings in Carlsbad, California. And we will see if they jump out there. In the meantime, this week, as you said, concludes the beginning of the end of the regular baseball season with the World Series ending either in game five or six or seven here. We won't know for another couple days. But locally, we have some interesting things going on with both teams. And we're just going to have to, every Saturday, join our great baseball fans in Chicago and talk about what's coming in the offseason, what's coming for both teams in 2022.
Yeah, we'll look ahead, and we will do that. We got Bob Nightingale from USA Today at 9:30 joining us later in the program. Pat Hughes at 10:45, the newest member of the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame. You know the voice well. We'll talk to Pat at 10:45. In between, Bruce, as you alluded to, we're going to look ahead. We're going to have some fun, and we're going to introduce a new segment at 10 o'clock called Chicago Bound, a brainchild of yours. It's going to be fun to consider who's coming and why they would want to be here, how they might fit with the Cubs and the White Sox. A lot of speculation, and I think that's part of the offseason fun, is to kind of speculate what trades make sense, what free agent signings make sense, and then whose money we want to spend the most, Bruce. Let's start with the White Sox. The biggest news to me this week, and it wasn't really that big a news except for it was confirmed and removed the doubt. Tony La Russa visiting a Bulls practice, announcing that he's coming back. So if anybody was wondering, well, maybe Tony La Russa was had enough after 1 year, maybe he's one and done. No, Tony La Russa tells Paul Sullivan of the Tribune that he's coming back, and I don't think many people would be surprised, Bruce, but what was your reaction just in hearing how it was handled and what he had to say?
Well, I think it's interesting because he left the last game of 2021 in pretty much of a rage about the Houston Astros, and then he asked about his own coming back, said that it's going to be totally up to the management of the Chicago White Sox and the players. If they don't sign off on him and he doesn't hear that they want him back, regardless of his contract situation, he's not returning. Well, it was affirmative all the way around. Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu spoke soon afterwards and said that they not only expect Tony to be back, but they want him back, and the team wants him back. So it was a slam dunk. But as you said, Paul Sullivan caught up with Tony at a Bulls practice. Tony was there just checking in with his old friend, Billy Donovan, who he goes way back with. You know, he's got a – Tony has a –
time out. How does he go way back with Billy Donovan?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
I'm curious. That's a fascinating little tidbit.
He has the strongest coaches union get-togethers of anybody in sports. He is best friends with Bill Belichick. He was very friendly with Phil Jackson when he was here as a coach. He is great friends with Bobby Knight. He has picked the brain and become friends of coaches in other sports to the point where they have shared information about coaching. And, you know, he just has this great great group of coaches that he goes back with, and Billy Donovan is one of them.
I thought you were going to tell me he played for James Naismith. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
There you go. You know, every week it's age discrimination with
no,
you.
No, it's not. I'm just making a bad joke. So Tony's coming back. He tells Sully he's coming back, and he's excited about next season. And we'll get into some of the specifics. It is interesting, as we'll also look at later, why we have heard from Tony before we've heard from Rick Hahn. But Bruce, you know, in the managing world, there's been a lot of speculation and a big move this week in Major League Baseball that has some Chicago connections. Bob Melvin leaves the Oakland A's, one of the best managers in baseball, to take the job with the San Diego Padres, and he got the job over our guy Ozzie Guillen. What was your surprise level? Well, number one, when you found out Ozzie was in the mix to the degree that he was, and number two, Bob Melvin would leave a job where he has been for a very long time and succeeded as well.
Well, Ozzie's well deserving of being a manager again. And for the life of me, I don't know why it's gone now 10 years in between stops. We know it was a bumpy road in Miami, and some of the commentary wasn't great, and it led to Ozzie not being there. But, you know, people forget what a great people manager that Ozzie Guillen is. A great manager of players. You know, a great tactician, a most interesting and fascinating baseball man. People have the great chance to listen to him before and after White Sox games on NBC Sports Chicago, and it's always intriguing, interesting, and honest. So I don't know why Ozzie hasn't gotten a job. I thought this was a perfect mix for him with Tatis Jr. there and with Machado there. and both of them having 9 more years left on contracts, or in the case of Tatis, maybe 12 more years left on a contract, to bring in a seasoned manager who is bilingual and has had great success handling all kinds of players, regardless of what country they're from. So I was very disappointed for Ozzy that that didn't happen. The Melvin part of it, David, is all about the money. It's all okay. Money. So Bob Melvin was making $4 million with Oakland. Bob Melvin has been there 11 years, and as you said, David, considered to be one of the very top guys in the game. He gets the most out of players with low payrolls in Oakland all over these years, gets them to the playoffs, just considered one of the top people in the game. Oakland is in a last-ditch effort to try to get a stadium deal done in Oakland and stay there. If they can, they're going to be spending a lot of their own money as well as county and state money to have that new stadium. They are tightening the belt. The consensus is that they're getting rid of all payroll, and that'll come into one of our other segments later on with one of their players. But the idea of saving $4 million on the manager,
okay,
sounds ridiculous, but it indeed is important for the Oakland A's, who allowed him to go without any compensation whatsoever to the San Diego Padres. That's kind of the mind-blowing part, but it shows you that they were more interested in saving the money than saving one of the best managers in the game.
That's stunning to me, because Billy Beane is one of the best executives in baseball, and to let Bob Melvin walk out the door without any compensation in return, you got fleeced. Now, maybe that is part of your narrative and part of your business plan, but from a baseball perspective, to get nothing back for a guy who has done such good work for you over the years, I don't know how they let that happen, but good for the Padres, I suppose, even though I was disappointed for Ozzy, too. I know he wanted this one. I know that, you know, you saw from his reaction expressed on social media how badly he wanted this one. He thanked the Padres for the first opportunity, I think he said, Bruce, in 9 years. It's a shame it's been that long that Ozzy has gotten a chance to tell a general manager and ownership group what he could bring to a franchise. I think he still has something to offer a team that wants to get over the top. He may be that guy. Maybe it's here in Chicago. I don't know. I'm not going to start anything. Maybe it's down the road, but he's...
Well, you mean with the Blackhawks?
Yeah, no. I mean, Ozzy could break down the power play probably with the best of them and maybe know how to kill penalties. And boy, he would be feisty killing penalties, wouldn't he? But I don't think that's the case. Bruce, Ozzy wanted this job, and I think he had the support, I have learned, of some of the biggest names on that roster. Manny Machado, who Ozzie Guillen has known since he was a 10-year-old kid in South Florida, went to bat for Ozzy to management and to ownership. And I think that they picked Bob Melvin, and it's understandable, but still disappointing for Ozzie Guillen, a guy who deserves another chance.
Well, I think Ozzie's still, he's still a young enough guy that he's going to get a chance down the road here. And who knows? After Tony La Russa is done managing the White Sox,
yeah,
it could be a perfect segue for Ozzy to return. At that point, maybe Jerry and his family are no longer running the White Sox at some point. You know, the White Sox could be sold down the road. Ozzy certainly has the wherewithal and the support in Chicago to be able to come back and segue. But I think it's Tony La Russa's job for the next couple of years as they try to go ahead and try to win a world championship with that very good talent that they have.
Bruce, before we get to some of the Cubs news of the week, I want to ask you this question. It's a good question from a texter from 312. Says, with the in light of the World Series, you have, look at Brian Snitker, you have Dusty Baker, you have two old school managers. You have two guys who have been around for a very long time doing the job. Should that make White Sox fans feel any better if they were kind of hedging about, well, you know, Tony La Russa's back for another year? Is this one of these, you know, trending things that now you should trust old school managers, because look at the World Series as proof that these are the right guys to have in your dugout if you want to win?
I don't think age is really important. I just think it's the individual and the man and how he fits in that organization at that particular time. The only reason we got so much pushback from Tony was not necessarily the age, but it was how how the decision was made. I think that a lot of people didn't like the idea that this was what Jerry wanted and this is what Jerry got. And as it turns out, it was a pretty good-looking decision because from the player's standpoint, I think from fans' standpoint, I don't think anybody really out there was harder on Tony La Russa than Tony La Russa. I mean, here was a guy that called himself out on mistakes, not knowing rules at one time, the Mercedes incident. If you look back at the Mercedes incident, it proved to be pretty much right on. I mean, so with all of that, the important thing is that before anybody else called Tony La Russa out, he would call himself out. And I thought that was refreshing. So age is, to me, means absolutely nothing. Snitker, was a guy that was in the Atlanta system for a million years, a coach in the minor leagues, a manager in the minor leagues. And he's just a good baseball man. La Russa, a good baseball man. Younger guys, you know, that are running teams, you know, all over baseball. Good baseball man. I don't care whether a guy's 76 or 36. If he can run a baseball team and he can manage and communicate with the people in that organization, that's my guy.
Great segue, Bruce, because 36 years old, hey, Oliver Marmol is 35. He's the new manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. They had an opportunity to go different. They got rid of Mike Schilt. Were they looking for somebody to execute the plans of the front office and use analytics more, or were they looking for a manager to be his own guy the way a lot of these experienced guys are?
That's to be determined. Staying in the organization smacks of that they feel that they know the guy, they've given him an opportunity, he knows the players in the system, he's been there forever. It's just Schilt with a different name on the back of the jersey.
I know what you're thinking. You've ever offered, Bruce.
But Schilt is a very good baseball man, and there was nobody that thought his job would be in jeopardy. But he stood up for what he thought was right. John Mozeliak, the president and general manager, said there was a huge difference of opinion. A lot of it was probably about analytics and the hitting instructor for the Cardinals. Regardless, the Cardinals forever, except maybe one difference in the last 25 years, Tony La Russa hired in 1996, have stayed in their organization always to hire their managers.
And if the White Sox still want to explore the idea of bringing Mike Schilt into the dugout as a bench coach,
that's your idea.
I'm saying, Bruce, he still doesn't have a job. He's not going to get hired in San Diego. Maybe he'll work for the Mets. Who wants to work for the Mets? They've had that job turned down now several times in terms of the front office. Yeah. Mike Schilt would make a lot of sense in a lot of dugouts.
I don't think you're wrong. I do not think you're wrong. I think he's a wonderful baseball man. Just like we saw Ricky Renteria brought in by the White Sox after he was fired from the Cubs a year later. He was a terrific and still is a terrific baseball guy. Maybe he wasn't the manager that they thought he would be and didn't, but that doesn't diminish Ricky Renteria as a baseball guy or Schilt as a baseball guy. And, you know, the knowledge of La Russa and Schilt having been together in St. Louis, you know, Schilt had been in the minor leagues managing at the time. I think the more good baseball men you bring in, the better off you are.
That was the thought process of the Cubs when they went out to hire their assistant general manager. And that's the last bit of news we want to get to this segment, Bruce. Locally, the Cubs make official this week. We haven't talked about it. Essen Bakari is the new assistant general manager. He comes from the Astros, and he's working already. I find this very fascinating. Not necessarily that they get Bakari because he's got a bright background. He started with the Dodgers. He's young. He fits the mold of the kind of executive the Cubs want to fill the front office with. But, Bruce, the Astros are in the midst of the World Series. For this guy to leave their front office in the midst of a World Series to start working for the Cubs already tells you how urgent the Cubs' needs may be. And I found that very interesting little tidbit about this move.
Well, it also shows you how important it is that they, you know, that I'm sure Jed Hoyer informed Bakari, look, we need to start yesterday with you in the R&D, helping run the R&D department and all the analytics that you bring as far as evaluating players. We need that now. We have a new general manager that we want you to work with, and me, and we need you right now. So you're going to have to start now. You can get your American League Championship ring or World Series ring down the line, but you know, this is where we're at. And that's what's happening. He's over at Clark and Addison. He has been this week. He's already working. So this is an important part with the offseason beginning here next week after the World Series ends, whether it's Sunday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and free agency beginning right away. The Cubs have to jump on that right away, and they need their top people all together working now.
Bruce, Beccari's background is with the Dodgers and the Astros, and he's called the Director of Research and Development. He has a history with the strategic decision-making that is rooted and immersed in analytics. Is he one of those guys that doing the research and basically telling you what lineup makes sense and one of those guys who you never see but has direct impact on what happens on the field?
I don't know about that you never see him. This is a pretty high-profile job. The Cubs have three assistant general managers.
Okay.
You know, they're all very, very important to the team. Jeff Greenberg, Craig Breslow, these guys are extremely important and essential to what goes on at Clark and Addison and what goes on with Jed Hoyer and his group of baseball people. And Beccari is going to be the same way as Hawkins, the new general manager. So this is a young, energetic group that is getting going over there on the north side of Chicago.
Carter Hawkins, general manager. You now have S.M. Beccari as the assistant. They have some new blood. They have some new voices. I think they needed some fresh voices, Bruce, and now they head into the offseason with a new outlook, perhaps some new perspectives, which will do some good. I'm very curious how aggressive they will be. They will be, you know, sounds good now. And we'll talk about this moving forward. You've got 88-win team in the World Series. The Cubs with a vow to compete in that division and compete for a playoff spot. Well, that would be in the 85-80-win victory realm, range. Is it realistic to expect them to make that kind of a jump? I'm not putting them in the World Series next year, Bruce. But don't they have to go into this offseason thinking that they are a 85-88-win type of a team in 2022?
I think so, and you know, really, what are the strengths in the National League? If you take away the last month of the season, the St. Louis Cardinals were the same as the Chicago Cubs. I mean, for 5 months they played the same type of baseball. So with all of that in mind, David, I think you can – the Dodgers are one team, you know, certainly the Braves are another, but it took the Braves until – the second week of August to start playing over 500 for the year. So I don't think it's a huge leap in thinking that if you start to tighten up and bring in a few very good free agents and tighten up the pitching, that you're a competitive team in the National League. I don't think the Cubs are there as we stand today. I think they're far from it, but five or six stealth moves in the offseason here, I think brings them a lot closer to that goal.
He's Bruce. I'm David. We are here inside the clubhouse until 11 o'clock. What do you think? 312-644-6767. We are talking baseball. We are talking Cubs, White Sox, World Series. And next, we're talking to Bob Nightingale from USA Today here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Against the lefty, Darnell flies one into center. Back at the wall. Come on! 2-0 Atlanta.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Thank you, Fox, for that highlight from World Series Game 3 last night, a 2-0 victory for the Braves over the Astros. Bruce Levine, David Haw here until 11 o'clock, and we are pleased now to go out to our guest hotline sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find USA Today baseball writer Bob Nightingale. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks, David. Thanks, Bruce.
Emotional game three last night, Bob, in Atlanta for the first time for the World Series since 1999. Hank Aaron tribute pregame. How would you describe that emotion of that moment and how that led to what was just an electric atmosphere and a really a well-played game by the Atlanta Braves?
Yeah, it was a very nice moment. You know, it was raining and cold. They weren't sure they were going to have it for a while, even the pregame introductions. But, yeah, very nice. And you realize how much it meant to everybody when after the game, Brian Snicker, Atlanta's manager, had to compose himself just talking about hugging Billy Aaron, the widow of Hank Aaron, and then saying how much he missed Hank. And Hank, of course, is the person who actually hired him, almost 40 years ago.
Bob, first of all, welcome. Good morning. Always great to have you on and get your expertise on what's going on in baseball. And I guess following up on David's question, Atlanta, went to the playoffs 14 years in a row, and there was kind of a rap on Atlanta baseball fans that they were kind of passive because they only won one world championship in that run in 1995. And it seemed like they couldn't fill the ballpark all the time for rounds before the World Series. I wonder if you felt there was a slight change in that, and the thirst by the Atlanta fans was a little bit different now with their new ballpark and not having been to the World Series in 22 years.
Yeah, very much so, Bruce. It's much more animated, more lively, a younger crowd. That area, they call the Battery, around the ballpark, a little bit like this, like 10 times the size of the ballpark village, is as wild a scene as I've seen. I was joking that Battery scene during the NLCS when they knocked off the Dodgers, it made Wrigleyville look like a church social. I mean, it's crazy there. it's nuts. And they, I was talking to Terry McGurk about that, the CEO, and he says, people got spoiled back in the day. They were saving their money. They weren't going to those playoff games. They're kind of sent for the World Series. And you're right, Bruce. That seemed much more corporate, where this one seems much more real.
So how do you explain how the Braves shut the Astros down to two hits? I mean, that is Ian Anderson, a rookie, throws five no-hit innings. They go to the bullpen. It gets even better. Bob, this is the Braves team that every button Brian Snitker pushes is the right one, and they're getting hot at the right time. It's really something to watch.
Yeah, I mean, with a beat-up pitching staff, you don't have Charlie Morton. They're going to try to win this World Series with only two starters, Anderson and Max Fried. And Max Fried has, kind of melted down in the World Series. But yeah, it's amazing what Anderson did. As Dusty Baker said, he was effectively wild. And that bullpen, it's absurd. It's amazing down the stretch. It looked like that's going to be Achilles' heel. Like, okay, they'll blow a couple games during the postseason. And they haven't. And they're pitching an awful lot. So far getting away with it.
As far as the series goes, we got 10 runs for one team, 9 for the other in 3 games. You're talking about two really potent offenses and two beat-up pitching staffs. What kind of surprise is that for you, knowing that there's hardly any starting pitching left, as you said, for Atlanta, and Houston comes in losing their top pitcher before the ALCS in McCullers. But yet, for some reason, pitching is still dominant right now.
Yeah, it's almost like so streaky, too, the first two games. I mean, couldn't have been, opposite from each other. But, yeah, it's just the scouting and everything else, I think, just gets so good and able to, just shut down the top guys. Look at Atlanta's team. Ozzie Albies has kind of disappeared. He hasn't done much at all. Alex Bregman probably got a hit last night, but he hasn't done much at all either in the postseason. It seems like teams just, focus on shutting down a couple of guys and then kind of the triple-down effect. Guys don't make the same mistakes as they do in the regular season in the postseason. Maybe just focusing better or what have you. But, yeah, night and day, the way these offenses looked in September compared to October.
We're talking with USA Today baseball writer Bob Nightingale here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And breaking news on The Score is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Protect your privacy online for free with DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. And away from baseball real quick, Bruce, the Bears have announced Matt Nagy remains in the NFL's COVID-19 protocol and will not coach in Sunday's game against the 49ers. Chris Tabor, the special teams coordinator, will serve as head coach. Matt Nagy not coaching Sunday against the 49ers. Wanted to get that in. We'll talk about that later. We want to finish up talking baseball. Bob, you're in Atlanta. You're awaiting game four. It's a pivotal game four. That's kind of goes without saying, isn't it? There's always pivotal game fours. What do you expect? How do the Astros combat? How do they counter? What is your expectation for how this series goes the next two nights?
Well, I always thought it was going to go seven. I still believe that way. I think, you know, Zach Greinke, you know, the old veteran for the Astros, this should be his last start in Houston. For Houston, I think he pitches well. I think he's going to pitch a dominant five or six innings here. You know, he hasn't gone long, has been hurt and beat up and everything else in months. But, you know, he's, you know, really looking for the chance to hit one last time. I mean, these should be the last two games a pitcher ever hits in the World Series. So I think he's going to do well. So I like Atlanta to win this game, and I think for Atlanta, they need to go back to Houston up 3-2 if they have a chance, because then they'll have Anderson for game seven, and I don't trust Max Fried. He's just not the same guy.
Yeah. Bob, locally, the Chicago White Sox, you know, Tony La Russa is coming back. Paul Sullivan talked to him the other day. He confirmed it. It's no surprise there, but you reported about 10 days ago that on the Craig Kimbrell situation, the White Sox have a $16 million option on his contract to pick up. And you reported that the White Sox will pick that up and then look for a possibility of a trade for Kimbrell, who would be someone else's closer and certainly not the White Sox closer while they continue to have Hendricks. What's a little of the background on that story? What are you hearing there?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't know why it was even a thing with Tony La Russa. He was always coming back, so there was never any doubt.
It was Tony. It was Tony that he was the one that ran all that out there. So that's why.
Yeah, yeah.
Became a story.
But yeah, but it was silly. Yeah, he was never not coming back. He's got a 3-year deal. But anyways, with the yes, I mean, the bottom line is Kimbrell, you know, isn't coming back to White Sox. It didn't work. I thought it was a big gimbal in the first place. I mean, you know, Bruce, these closers do not like to pitch in the eighth inning. And Kimbrell's always been like that, you know. So he struggled big time in that. And, you know, if people talk, you know, so many people say future Hall of Famer. I'm not sure about that at all. Very good pitcher, very good reliever. I don't consider him a Hall of Famer. But I just think it'd be embarrassing, real embarrassing for the White Sox to just simply, you know, release him, let him go, don't pick up that option. You know, and then the Cubs want him, they can just bring him back. So now you got Madrigal.
Do you think, Bob, do you think that someone's going to pay $16 million or the White Sox are going to have to eat some of that in order to get a good player back for Kimbrell because of the fact that he pitched so miserably for them as a setup man?
I think they'll have to eat some of it, Bruce. You know, maybe $3 million, $4 million of it. I think worst comes to worst. You bring him to spring training, show everybody he's healthy and everything else, and go from there. I think it would be a, very embarrassing, you know, that trade. There's going to be like, kind of a laughing stock, like, oh, my God, you got Kimbrell for 2 months and gave away your starting second baseman and got nothing in return. So there's too many teams that need back-end relief, too many teams. So if they do not pick up Kimbrell, you'd have, you know, 29 other teams trying to get this guy.
Bob, take a step back. So big picture, we're looking at a Braves team that won 88 games. We're looking at a Braves team that went into the trade deadline after losing, you know, perhaps their best player, all-around player, and they rebuilt their outfield. They were aggressive at the deadline, and here they are on the verge of winning a World Series in their minds. What's the takeaway from the league standpoint as it approaches, as maybe pertains to the trade deadline philosophy? Then also here locally, does this reinforce teams like the Cubs, who seem miles away from competing for a World Series, but going into next year thinking if you're competitive enough, if you get to the 85-88 game threshold, you can do something in October?
Well, I think it certainly spoke to last year's deadline, David, in the sense that, you know, the Cubs went through a bad 10-day stretch and said, we're done, wave the white flag. Certainly Atlanta could have done that. Everybody, you know, somebody expected them to do that. Nobody thought they'd be aggressive. It worked out like a charm. And they got four outfielders that anybody in baseball could have had. They gave up nothing for those guys. And look what they've done. But yeah, I think they'll expand the playoffs next year. I'm not as confident as I was before, but I still think they'll expand. So it makes it, you know, makes it really hard for teams to sell that to their fan base. We're building for the future, you know, when they when you got a playoff berth to win. But I think what Atlanta did shows everybody, hey, if you just have a remote chance here, you know, go for this thing, and you know, worry about the future later.
Bob, as far as the CBA and you know, the collective bargaining agreement between the owners and the players, December 1st. We haven't heard a lot of activity. We saw some posturing from both Tony Clark, the Players Association head, and Rob Manfred at the beginning of the World Series. What's your take on it? Do you think there's activity going on? And at this point, do you think there's going to be a disruption in the 2022 season?
Yeah, I'm in the minority here, Bruce, but I think they'll have a CBA done, you know, whether it's done December 1st, you know, why not, maybe how about December 8th, December 15th, something like that. But during the World Series here, they met just about every day. You know, they're meeting several times a week. And it seems like every year of the CBA, everybody predicts doomsday and something gets done. I still believe something gets done. I mean, the bottom line is, I don't care if you miss one day of spring training game, I think it'd be disastrous for baseball. I mean, baseball's in some trouble here. I mean, right now, what is the Generation Z or whatever it has baseball as the sixth most favorite sport. The first two World Series games were the least watched World Series games of all time. So they cannot afford, you know, anything to upset the fans. And we had, 20 to 30 teams had a drop-off in attendance. The only two teams were the White Sox and Padres. So they can't afford it. Players lost two-thirds of their salaries during the pandemic, and the owners lost $3 billion a year ago and lost money again this year. So I think something gets done. I really do.
Bob, David and I appreciate you joining us from the World Series. Have a good time covering it. What's your prediction for the rest of the way?
You know, my heart tells me Astros, obviously, because of Dusty Baker. I picked Atlanta in spring training to win the World Series, so I got to stick with them. You can flip a coin, and you really can. I think the Charlie Morton thing still kind of flips the tables towards Atlanta.
Right.
But Atlanta's tough, so I'll stick with Atlanta, but my heart certainly tells me the Astros.
Yeah, I hear you.
Good work, Bob.
Dusty.
Appreciate you joining us from the World Series, and we will continue to talk to you throughout what we think will be pretty active off season here in Chicago. Thank you, Bob Nightingale, USA Today.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Bruce.
Take care, Bob.
We will come back here on Inside the Clubhouse. We're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to go football. We got to address this Bears situation, because breaking news is Matt Nagy is not coaching tomorrow against the 49ers. He will be restricted because of COVID-19 protocols. Chris Tabor will take his place. We will talk about it next here Inside the Clubhouse. Going football for one segment here, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hey, Matt, I hope you're feeling well. Can you give us any update on how things are going for you and whether you've gotten that first negative test that you need yet?
Yeah, I don't have any updates yet in regards to all that. I think the biggest thing, Jason, is for me is just to be able to listen to our head trainers in the league and just them letting me know, whether I'm on or off of the COVID protocol list and the COVID list. And as of right now, I'm on it, you know, so I appreciate you asking.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score. Usually talking baseball as we do every Saturday morning, 52 weeks a year, 9 to 11. But we interrupt this baseball show to bring you some breaking football news. Breaking news on the Score is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Matt Nagy not coaching against the 49ers on Sunday. Chris Tabor, special teams coordinator, will take his place. Matt Nagy on the COVID protocol list. He has not been around all week at Hallis Hall. presumably coaching from his basement. We bring in now, it's Biggs time on a Saturday, a special bonus Biggs time. Brad Biggs is the Chicago football guy, the football guy for the Chicago Tribune, joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Brad, what is your reaction to the news today?
Well, it's not surprising given the fact that Matt Nagy had been out all week, guys, and the rules state that he's got to be able to return two negative PCR tests 24 hours apart. So if they're ruling him out at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, that means he hasn't gotten that I would assume that means he hasn't gotten that first negative test back yet, which would mean there's no way he's going to get the second one back in time for kickoff. So Chris Tabor in charge at Soldier Field for a big game for both teams. Both teams entering tomorrow's kickoff, guys, desperate for a victory.
All right, Brad, so we've been talking all week on Mullenhaw about the impact potentially if Matt Nagy isn't there. Chris Tabor, special teams coordinator, a lot of respect in the locker room, been around a while. If a fan's going to Soldier Field, if they're watching the Bears on TV, what changes might they see, if any, in a Chris Tabor coach team? And what are the possible pitfalls if you have a guy stepping in an interim basis with the coaching mechanics on a Sunday?
Well, the pitfalls could be numerous. You know, what's going to happen when he's got to make a critical decision in a very short period of time? It's not like he can press the pause button as he confers with the other coaches on what are we going to do in terms of this play that maybe I should break the red flag out on or not, right? You know, you've only got a few seconds there to decide if you want to throw the challenge flag. Are you going to go for it on fourth and 2.5 at the 49-yard line, or are you going to punt? You know, those are decisions that when we see them happen in the game and maybe they don't go the right way, it's really easy to ask questions about it after the game and then consider all the possibilities and either criticize it or support it after the game. He's going to have 20, 30 seconds in real time to make that happen. So I think that, you know, the number of pitfalls could be numerous. Chris Tabor does have head coaching experience. It's been quite a while. 2001 at Culver Stockton, an NAIA program in Missouri, he led the Wildcats to a 6-5 season, which was their first winning season in 15 years. That was a long time ago. Culver Stockton's been mighty bad since then. The Wildcats have had one winning season since Chris Tabor was the head coach. Although you got to give him credit, I think they're 6-2 entering this weekend. So he's able to take a program that's had, two winning seasons in 35 years or something. He was able to be the guy behind one of them. Now, will any of that translate to Sunday? Probably not. But as a special teams coordinator, he deals with guys on the entire roster. And you don't want to take Bill Lazor or Sean Desai and pull them away from their duties during the week or on game day.
Brad Biggs, the Bigfoot football writer for the Chicago Tribune, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse, talking about the breaking news. Matt Nagy will not be coaching the Bears this weekend. Brad, with technology being what it is, which is superlative as far as audio and technical situations, is it possible, and again, it's going to take a little speculation right now, but is it possible that Nagy will be in touch with both the offensive and defensive coordinator throughout the game, and that he will have input, and that the offensive and defensive coordinators will be calling most of the game plan from upstairs with Nagy in charge?
No, that would be, I believe, a pretty serious violation of league rules. In fact, the Cleveland Browns got slapped with the penalty for something that wasn't quite as far-flung as that a couple years ago when the GM was phoning down to the sideline during the game about certain things. And that was the general manager at the stadium trying to have some influence in what was going on. And so there was a considerable penalty for the Browns organization. So I don't think Matt Nagy is going to be calling shots from his basement, from a hotel, wherever. He did talk about yesterday. He was like he didn't know exactly what he was going to do Sunday if he couldn't be there. He didn't know how big of a television set he would need. So I guess he can, you know, order that up now. You know, I need 80 inches or whatever. I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm imagining they're going to have a pretty big screen for him to be able to watch the game Sunday. But I think they could be in big trouble if he tried to coach from parts unknown.
It's going to be like your basement, Brad. One last quick thought. Does this have any impact emotionally on a Bears team that needs a win badly, needs a win desperately? As you pointed out, both teams are a little desperate as they come in here. You look for edges, you look for little things. Could this emotionally give the Bears a boost because their head coach tested positive and he can't be where he wants to be?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about professional athletes that shouldn't need a whole lot of exterior motivation when the team's been struggling lately. So I don't know that gives them any sort of boost here. You know, they've got guys on offense that've been literally taking turns screwing up. Okay, and it's across the board. So those guys need to show up and have some pride and play a whole lot better on Sunday. I can't think of a way to spin this as a positive for the Bears. And they've got to stop this COVID train. You know, Jermaine Effetti was placed on the reserve COVID list yesterday. They've gone through about a 15-day period now where they've had way too many staff members and players involved in this. So they've got to clean that up and hope that they have got some better fortune here moving forward quickly.
Brad, thanks so much for jumping on with this breaking news. Really appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. See you tomorrow. Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune responding to the breaking news here on The Score. Matt Nagy not coaching Sunday against the 49ers. Tested positive for COVID. Remains in protocol. Will watch the game from home like everybody else. Chris Tabor will fill in as the interim coach. Is the interim head coach for the Bears. He is a special teams coordinator. We'll continue to mention that throughout the show, but we're going to get back to baseball, Bruce. This is Inside the Clubhouse. We are talking baseball 52 weeks a year, and we've got a new segment. This is going to be a lot of fun. Chicago Bound. Who do you think could be coming to the White Sox or the Cubs in the offseason, whether it's via free agency or a trade? We will discuss that next here Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, each with the space, tech, and features to handle it all, from the worksite to the trails. It means driving for less, with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range, and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power. And it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked number one and number two in resale value over all vehicles, according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
Messi fans, Lowe's Messi Halftime event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a Mylo's Rewards or a Mylo's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messi moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messi Halftime event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We the people of the ballpark are all in on baseball. We deserve dingers and dogs, sunshine and a beat, a place to take it all in and let it all out. Baseball. For the people. Baseball is something else. Visit MLB.com/tickets and spend this summer with us. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.